Okay, thank you, Michael. And good afternoon. I'll be talking about increases in syphilis and gonorrhea among men who have sex with men in the United States. And I want to particularly thank my co-authors, Sarah Kidd, Mark Stenger, Robert Gercaldi, and Lisa Yada, who really did most of the work that made this presentation possible. Is there a pointer? I think it's been pretty well documented and described that primary and secondary syphilis has increased dramatically in men who have sex with men over the past 15 years or so. I don't know if I can use the, is there a pointer? That,
this looks like it's taped down.
Well, anyway, I can, yeah, I have a, I can use this. So you can see the, there, the increase in rates among men since really the mid to late 1990s. At the same time, rates among women drifted downward. And we see this male to female rate ratio skyrocketing, suggesting again that rates in primary and secondary syphilis among men who have sex with men have been increasing. And here you can see more direct evidence where we had information about sexual orientation in a number of states over this the last 6 or 7 years. You can see that there were increases in the number of cases reported among men who have sex with men, whereas in men who have sex with women only, fairly stable. In women, it's come down, the rates have come down a little bit. Oops. Sorry. So the question we have is, are we also seeing increases in gonorrhea among men who have sex with men in the United States? Case reports on gonorrhea, unlike syphilis, lack information on sexual orientation. There are over 330,000 cases reported each year in the United States for gonorrhea, many more that we can possibly get behavioral information on. In addition, many cases of gonorrhea are asymptomatic, and reports may reflect screening activities as opposed to symptomatic disease. So to address this, we compared patterns of GC increases to those of syphilis increases in the National Notifiable Disease Surveillance System, and we reviewed cases of gonorrhea in 3 surveillance systems, including NNDSS. So here you see the overall rates of gonorrhea among men and women over the past 20 years. And if you see after a decline, they've been pretty stable for both men and women, with perhaps a slight drift downward. You might notice in the last several years, rates among men have gone up somewhat. And I'll show that here. This is since 2007. And you can see, I think this is 2008, rates among men have gone up. Rates among women have remained fairly stable, if not gone down. So as you know, the National Notifiable Disease Surveillance System that I've described here is for primary and secondary syphilis for 2007 to 2013. I'm also going to show gonorrhea rates from 2007 to 2014. These are preliminary data, and they may change slightly. And they're data from STD control programs and health departments in all 50 states and the U.S. territories. And they're reported electronically through the National Electronic Telecommunication System for Surveillance, NETS. So here again are data for syphilis, and you can see that rates have increased really in all regions of the country, perhaps most prominently in the western part of the United States. When you look at similar data for gonorrhea among men, you also see increases almost in all areas, regions of the country, but again, most prominently among in the west. This is primary and secondary syphilis, again, among men by age group. And again, you see increases in all age groups. But you see the biggest increases among the 20 to 24-year-olds and the 25 to 29-year-olds. But it's certainly going up in all age groups, including the youngest, the 15 to 19-year-olds. For gonorrhea among men, however, we also are seeing increases in all age groups, except the youngest group, where it's going down slightly, but perhaps going up mostly in the 20 to 24-year-olds. And And I'm sorry, the 20 to 24 year olds and the 25 to 29 year olds. When we focus a little more on the 25 to 29 year olds among men with syphilis by race ethnicity, we can see that there, again, increases in all groups, most prominently among African American men, if only because rates are highest in that group, but certainly proportionally speaking, the increases are just as big in all racial and ethnic groups. But you do note, obviously, the huge racial disparities that we see for syphilis here. For gonorrhea, most of the increases are among racial and ethnic groups other than African Americans, so it's increasing in that group as well, but certainly more prominently in the other racial ethnic groups. But again, we see this huge racial disparity for gonorrhea as well. So we wanted to look at another data surveillance system to again evaluate whether increases are occurring among men who have sex with men, and we looked at the STD Surveillance Network, SUN. The objectives of SUN, and I'll be talking about Cycle 2, completed in 2013. The objectives are to improve capacity to detect, monitor, and respond rapidly to trends in STDs, to enhance collection, reporting, analysis, visualization, and interpretation of clinical, behavioral, and geographic information. And we hope to use the data to guide local, state, and national STD programs and policies. Some of the SUN methods, and this is not all of what SUN does, but each site interviews a random sample of individuals diagnosed with gonorrhea from cases reported to the health department. A random sample of about 240 patients per year are interviewed at each jurisdiction and by a phone or an in-person interview. And the interviews are conducted or should be conducted within 60 days of diagnosis. And we collect information on demographics, behavioral risk factors, and medical history. You can see here the map, which shows the SUN jurisdictions from 2009 to 2013, and there are states and cities that were funded through SUN, about 12 sites in all, though I'm only going to show data for 8 where we had data through 2013. So when we lump all this the data together from these 8 jurisdictions, and look at the proportion of GC cases in SUN by sex and sexual orientation from 2010 to 2013, you can see, again, that the proportion that are women have gone down over time. The proportion that are men who have sex with women only have remained somewhat stable. And the proportion that are MSM perhaps have gone up over this 4-year period. It's not that impressive. When you look at it by jurisdiction, however, it appears to have gone up in almost all jurisdictions, maybe with the possible exception of California, but it appears to have gone up everywhere else where we've looked. Another surveillance system is the gonococcal isolate surveillance system, or GISS, and it's a national surveillance system that was established in 1986. And the objectives of it were to monitor Neisseria gonorrhea antibiotic susceptibility trends and to inform treatment recommendations. And it's conducted in 26 to 30 STD clinics with sampling of cultures obtained from the first 25 men each month who have urethritis. And susceptibility testing is done by 4 to 5 regional laboratories. I'm not going to be talking about susceptibility testing or results. But we do collect epidemiologic and clinical information from medical records in GISP. And these, here on this map, you can see the 28 or so clinics in the orange dots where they're located throughout the United States. When you lump all of this data together and look at the proportion of urethral isolates obtained from the first 25 men who come into these clinics with urethritis, you see that the proportion who are MSM has gone up over time. And it's particularly gone up most rapidly in the last several years. This last point is about 35% of all men who come in to these clinics with gonorrhea, with symptomatic gonorrhea. looking at these data regionally, again, we see most prominently the increases really everywhere in the country, in the West, Midwest, and South, but probably the most striking in the Midwest and Northeast and South. Oops, I know I did that. So in conclusion, relatively small changes in the epidemiology of gonorrhea may be difficult to detect, especially with a large endemic background. GC in men is increasing, while it appears to be decreasing in women. And case reports suggest similar patterns of increase in gonorrhea in men as observed for syphilis. The patterns observed, along with data from Sun and GIST, suggest that the increase is among men who have sex with men. The increase in numbers of cases observed could be due to increased screening of asymptomatic infections in extragenital sites. However, data from GIST in predominantly symptomatic men suggests that increased screening alone, at least, can't explain the increases in men who have sex with men. Again, I'd like to acknowledge my co-authors, the Sun collaborators, and the GIST principal investigators, the investigators at the clinical sites, and also the state and local health departments and STD programs that provided notifiable disease data. Thank you.
Great presentation. Questions for Dr. Weinstock? Stand up, please.
Sure.
Let us know who you are.
I'm Carol Holden from Boulder County Public Health. I just wanted to know if your research controlled somehow for if over time there was a change in the rate of disclosure for MSM. Like maybe earlier on, men weren't as likely to say they were men with sexual disorder, but now it's looking more so.
Right. Well, what we did try to do is limit. As you saw in one of those slides, we only had 33 areas where we had reporting of MSM status. And that's because, again, over time, more and more jurisdictions have reported sexual orientation information about syphilis. I think that was what you were asking about. So
she was saying self-report, that the individual might not disclose they were MSM in the past.
Well, where we had that information, or where we thought we had that information, we included those states and those jurisdictions. Obviously, there could be misclassification. I think there's enough data at this point, including data just among men and women, to corroborate what we're seeing from the behavioral data that we're getting.
So is there any move for NMDSS to have behavioral orientation? I mean, you think of things like meningitis and shigella.
It does. It does have behavioral information, but it's not practical to get it on gonorrhea cases. There are over 300,000 cases, or say chlamydia cases, where there are 1.4 million. So we do get it for primary and secondary and early latent syphilis, where we're able, which is practical to interview almost all of those individuals. It's not practical to interview, 300,000 cases, and that's why. Really, a sentinel system like Sun is beneficial because you can interview a sample of reported cases, but you can't interview them all.
Other questions? I had one sort of based on that last comment. What would you think about moving the STD surveillance system in the United States to a sample-based system, period?
And eliminating reporting.
Sort of, yeah. Mm-hmm. The information we gain is from sampling, sort of provocative intentionally, but mm-hmm. I'm curious, given your experience.
I mean, I think they're both needed. I think they're both helpful. I think we get different information from each. I think if a disease is not notifiable, it would be hard to implement a sentinel system at the same time. But I agree with you that it's something worth thinking about.
Great. Thank you very much.